Greetings to you, O motherless children of the divine goddess. It is I, D. Trussell, and you have tuned in to the ontological blaster known as the DTFH. Do I really know what ontological means? Not really. Let's look it up. Ah, yes, just what I thought. Relating to the branch of physics dealing with the nature of being. Yep, ontological blaster. That is what you have tuned into, and we're pouring in to your delicious, waxy ear caverns on this very special week. Not only is this the birthday of the founder of the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey, it is also the first time in human history that we laid eyes on a black hole. They took a picture. Well, they combined a bunch of pictures. Well, they used radio imagery. Well, they captured slivers of light and used algorithms to weave together an image of a black fucking hole, a singularity. Do you remember the black hole movie? If you don't, it's probably because you are younger than me. But I remember the black hole movie. I remember how it impacted me in the most serious way. Not just because there was a weird robot with that blender thing that shot out of his chest and ripped that guy's heart out, blended people up, but also because it was a fucking black hole. It was a movie about a black hole. And for a young D. Trussell, there were a couple of things that were agony for my brain. Number one, the realization that I would never lay eyes on a living dinosaur. I don't think at the time we knew that birds were sort of evolved dinosaurs. And certainly we didn't know that some of our politicians could transform into reptilians. We just knew there was a thing called the brontosaurus and a meteor hit, and you're never going to see the fucking brontosaurus except in those books with pictures of the velociraptors perched on their back, ripping the brontosaurus flesh off as though it were fucking jerky. Do you remember those? The hyper-violent dinosaur pictures when you were a kid? I don't even know if they still do the hyper-violent dinosaur pictures, or maybe I just ended up with like a fucked up book of dinosaurs. But the book I had, it was definitely not tiptoeing around the fact that life for a dinosaur, if you were a brontosaurus, basically meant at some point a bunch of velociraptors were going to jump on your back and slowly rip big steak chunks out of your back while you balefully looked at them in this sad way, not even fighting back, up to your fucking knees in primordial swamp water. And then it would like slowly dawn on you that you're never going to see that. You're never going to get to witness that. You're never going to see a pterodactyl. You're never going to get to see the mighty Tyrannosaurus Rex. And then you find out about a black hole, this infinitely deep, hyper-compressed, magical, potentially a magical gateway to another realm that was somewhere in space, but you were only going to look at pictures of it. And so Disney releases the black hole movie. I still remember the soundtrack to the black hole movie. It goes, do 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 do. I'll see if I can find it. I used to have this album. I'd just sit and stare at it and wish I was in a black hole. How do you not add a beat to this? I am a hole of black. I'm smoking stars like crack. You will never reach me. You will never bleach me. And if you do, your ass and your shoes will be light years apart while I spaghettify you, bitch. Fuck your science facts and fuck your science fiction. I shit on your physics, wipe my ass with your religion. Albert Einstein said, God don't play dice, but I watch God and Jesus run a train on Einstein's wife. She came. Neil deGrasse Tyson coming for you. Gonna suck your dick while I turn you into star goo. Game of Thrones, give me a fucking reason that you put an entire year between your seventh and eighth season. Whoa. Who would have thunk that black holes would be Game of Thrones fans? Well, we've got a very special podcast for you today with one of my favorite creative minds on the planet. He is the co-creator of a series called Rick and Morty. Not only that, but he makes amazing video games. And he's got one that you can play on VR called Accounting, which is one of the funniest, craziest games I've ever played. And real soon, he's got a game coming out called Trover. In fact, pre-order it if you can. Give this man some love. He deserves it. How do you become the conduit of one of the funniest shows on TV right now and maintain a supremely cool, humble attitude? How does your ego not swell to the size of a billion fucking planets? How do you not implode and turn into a black hole and suck all of reality into your deep, compressed neuroticism? Somehow, Justin Roiland has pulled this off. We had a glorious conversation. We're going to jump right into this. But first, some quick business. Oh, shit. And before I forget, if it's still online, check out House of Cosby's, another wonderful creation of Justin Roiland. I think he might have made it with Harmon. Thank God these two super geniuses are making stuff together. All right, that's it. We're going to jump right into this great episode. But first, some quick business. May the Freedom Warlock shine his seven rays of glory upon today's sponsor, Squarespace.com. Squarespace is the ultimate way for you to create a website of such resonant beauty that it could cause a bifurcation in the time-space continuum and continue the infinite fragmentation of the material universe caused by the booting up of the quantum computers over at the CERN Particle Accelerator, or the Large Hadron Collider. ParticleAcceleratorsSuck.com is available right now. Just think of that. ParticleAcceleratorsSuck.com, a website that you could use to get your message to the world that it's time for us to not accelerate particles, but we need to decelerate, slow it down, and get some nice, massaged, relaxed particles. Your website could focus on a new particle relaxation technology, some benzodiazepine mixed in with a vibrating micro chair that particles can sit in and slowly enjoy life for once. ParticleDecelerator.com is available right now. Think about that. You could own Particle Accelerator Suck, ParticleDecelerator.com, and you could even get the triumvirate of Particle Accelerator Decelerator websites and own the entire market of particle manipulation and buy ParticleLord.com. And guess what? ParticleLady.com is also available. Squarespace gives you everything you need to create a website so beautiful it will draw wise men and women to your house, bringing gifts for your website. Want to sell your leftover socks online? You can do it with Squarespace.com because they have shopping cart functionality. Not only that, but they have award-winning templates that size to any device. So if you want to create a website fast, maybe it just occurred to you that it might be nice to create a beautiful website for the person you went on a Tinder date for a couple of nights ago, you could build one almost instantaneously. If you want to create a deep, complex, beautiful website like the one over at DuncanTrussell.com, which is a Squarespace website, you can go as deep as you want. Head over to squarespace.com/Duncan, and when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan and you will get 10% off any purchase of a website or a domain. You can start your free trial, see if it works for you, assemble a glorious website, and then blast that baby right into the new sphere. Let that son of a gun go clambering down the sandy beach that is the everything that isn't the internet and swimming into the internet like a baby turtle going home to the sea. And yes, babyturtlegoinghometothesea.com is available. Thank you, Squarespace, for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Darling friends, we also have a wonderful Patreon page where you can have early access to episodes of the DTFH. And every month, an hour-long rambling thing that I do. And for those of you who are currently Patreon friends, I've betrayed you completely. Last month, I got too busy working on a thing which I cannot name. But fear not, For this month will be the month that I explode so much sweet, hot, vibrating glory all over that Patreon that it is going to cause earthquakes, opposite of earthquakes. It's going to cause earth restabilizations. It's going to cause the opposite of landslides. Land sucks. And it's going to bring back to life things all over the planet, and these things will climb from the earth and they will come to your home if you're one of my subscribers, and they're going to love on you and make you feel the way you know you have needed to feel for a very long time as they run their thick, calloused, mildly rotting hands and paws upon every inch of your sweet, trembling body, dripping wet, hard, and ready to get down with the undead recently revitalized by my Patreon page. Head over to patreon.com/DTFH and sign up. We also have a shop located at duncantrussell.com. You can get Stop Drinking Crow's Milk stickers, and you can let people know your stance on this issue, which to this very day is rocking our society, is causing divisions within families, within relationships. I've even heard that colonies of termites are collapsing because of this terrible issue. You gotta decide where you stand. We're no longer at a place where you can ride that fence. Do you drink crow's milk or are you against it? Let your neighbors know. Go to duncantrussell.com and click on the shop. Okay, my darling sweets, with us here today is the glorious body containing within it the infinite mind that is one half of the creative engine of the magnificent animated series Rick and Morty. Everyone, please, at this very moment, whether you believe in this shit or not, I want you to open your chest with your psychic hands. Pull out your throbbing golden chakric walnut heart and zing it like a baseball into the ethereal, pulsating mycelial fabric that makes up our entire universe, so that at this very moment, today's guest receives a much-deserved rain of walnut heart love upon his astral being. He deserves it. He created, co-created an incredible series, Rick and Morty. He made House of Cosby's. He made accounting. And now he's given us what certainly will be one of the funniest video games of all time. Trover Saves the Universe. That's going to be out real soon. Maybe by the time you listen to this, it'll already be out. And I'm sure that over the next 1,000 years, this immortal infinite being disguising himself as a mere human will bring us many, many, many more laughs, which this particular sector of the multiverse so desperately needs. Now, everybody, welcome to the DTFH, the great Justin Roiland.
I hate headphones. I don't like them.
Well, they get your earwax smashed down. Well,
it's also just, I don't like hearing my own voice.
Oh, yeah.
Even when dissonance. I record the show, like, or any, like, Rick and Morty or Soul or any video game stuff, I'm just like, no headphones. I never wear them.
Whoa.
Yeah, unless they're like, no, you have to.
What is it you don't like about your voice?
I don't know. I hate myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, I'm one of those.
Which part of yourself do you hate?
I don't know. I think I've just always sort of had this, like, from a very young age, this kind of sort of just dissatisfaction with me. You know, like when I was real little, it was like I had freckles all over my face, and I was like, oh, fuck, man, no one's ever going to love this ugly, like, you know, that kind of shit, you know?
You told yourself that. That sounds like something somebody said to
no,
you.
No, like- no, I fucking, nobody else said it. I was very much all me. I mean, I would just sort of gauge the, you know, and I'm talking like kindergarten, first year, I mean, real little, I was like very down on myself. But I wasn't like I was some morose, miserable, you know, head down kid. I had tons of fun and... But I definitely had a deep sort of like understanding of like, okay, girls don't like me. I'm definitely not the popular kid. I don't trust myself enough to be outgoing and fun and wild, you know, and to sort of win people over. And it just got worse and worse. I also do this thing where I would like, you know, not to say my parents didn't give me enough attention, but maybe they didn't, because my mom would be watching TV and I would just harass the fuck out of her until she would start punching me in the arm.
What?
It wasn't like, you know, abuse. I loved it. I wanted her to punch me in the arm really hard. I've had girlfriends in the past where I'm like, will you just punch me in the arm really hard?
Isn't that weird?
It's
how that
fucking
transfers
weird.
Over?
It's not a sexual thing. It's sort of just more like this weird, like, I don't know. It's, yeah. But looking back, I was like, oh, that was me just trying to eke out any kind of, like, you know, affection and love from
your mom.
Yeah. And again, like, best parents, like, fucking amazing parents.
Sure.
I just think my relationship with my dad kind of, it's not, there's distance there. It's sort of, it's not like this open, loving, I love the guy, he loves me, but it's like, you know, it's not like this insane, you know,
it's not
crying
touchy,
together
feely.
And like, yeah, there's, I've never cried, we've never had real intimacy,
yeah.
I guess is the thing. So, I've talked about that shit in therapy, and I'm like, I think it's definitely a contributing factor. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a bunch of shit. Just like where you're just like, I don't fucking like myself. I'm better about it now, but yeah.
Well, this is there's this Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche said something super smart that I think about, which is before you can reject yourself, you have to know who you are. And a lot of times, like people who have, this is like this these days, man, lots of people hate themselves.
Oh,
it's
sure.
It's a
sick time we live in.
Yeah, people are really hard on themselves. And I used to hate myself. I used to not only hate myself, like I fashionably hated myself. Like I thought it was embarrassing if people liked themselves.
Okay.
And to this day,
I'm kind of that way.
Yeah, man. And you run into, well, there is something, because like, sometimes you might run into someone who's like
just so like loves themselves, and and you're just
so
like
schmaltzy.
Dude,
you're like, get the fuck out of here. Okay, you love yourself, whatever. What are you gonna fucking puff yourself up and go down the Macy's Day Parade? Look at you, you're so puffy.
But you know what? Well, keep going.
Yeah.
Hear your point. Yeah.
Let me just make sure this is recording, by the way, because this is a good conversation. I'm glad we're talking about this because this is like something that someone asked me this the other day. What do you do about hating yourself? And then I'm studying meditation with this guy, David Nickturn. I got on the phone with him. I was talking, FaceTiming with him.
Yeah.
And he was explaining to me about this conceptualization of the self in Buddhism called Abhidharma. And it's basically there's like five Abhidharmas, which are your senses. And then the sixth Abhidharma is your thoughts. Then the seventh Abhidharma is your subconscious, you could say, or like the, not just that though, but like the, in Buddhism, there's reincarnation. So it's like the reservoir of all your past lives and shit.
Interesting.
And then the eighth one is like the Akashic records, the archetypes, the sum total of all human experience. And that is what anyone is. So these days people think they're the sixth Abhidharma. That's how they don't, you know, you look at your body, you don't really think that's who I am.
Yeah.
But this never-ending sort of expulsion of thought patterns that form some kind of cycle that
you say,
oh, that's me. Mm. I'm the thoughts. I must be that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's usually when people say they hate themselves. They don't really hate themselves. They hate that incessant. It's like living next to someone with a shitty dog.
Yeah, no. I mean, it gets into sort of observing your thoughts, stepping outside of your thoughts, like trying to separate your being from the rattling noise in your brain, and sort of like stepping away and just sort of like listen, like what the fuck is this shit, like what is all this stuff?
Yeah,
I mean that's very much like, you know, like I don't know, power of now or presence, and just sort of like disassociating from the egoic mind, all that crazy shit. But it works. I mean, I've had a lot of times where I'm freaking out, I'm anxiety or whatever, and then I'm like, okay, like what? I just kind of try to elevate, pop to the part of my brain that's sort of above all of that madness.
Yes.
and just look at it and observe it, yeah, and let it continue, but just from a perspective of watching. And your brain kind of starts to go, what the fuck are you doing? What are you doing? Stop watching me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you can click into that spot, it's hard to do, but if you can click into that spot, it's kind of interesting to see how your brain, you know, reacts. Real quick, just to clarify, those confident people we were talking about a second ago that walk around and you're just like, oh my God. I think for me, it's like, you know, it's a bit of like, I don't want to say jealous, maybe envy, but more so, it's closer to what you were saying, where it's like oh God, like you're not that fucking cool, you're not even cool, you're not that adorable,
not
you know
at
what
all.
I mean? Usually these people are they're just like, no one ever told them like, hey, yeah, it's not like, shut the fuck up,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Or they had some blessed like, or they're just impervious, they're just like so. There's a thing in their brain that's given them so much confidence that, like, you ever see people on, like, American Idol, and they're trying out, and they're clearly incredibly talentless. Not that I watch that show anymore. I mean,
it's
I'm talking,
good.
I haven't seen it since fucking forever, but
yeah.
But I used to, like, William Hung, you know, that's when I was watching it back that long ago. But I always found it fascinating, these people that would argue with them. Like, no, I'm fucking good. Like, fuck you.
Yeah. It's,
and I'm like, I kind of want a little of that.
Yeah.
Like I would love that because that I don't have that. I have the thing where if someone said that fucking sucks, I just fall into a pit of shame.
Yeah.
And I'm it's like it's too easy to just break
sure.
me, you know? Or at least I guess it used to be. But yeah, man. I've gotten pretty numb to it though. Like as of now, I feel like. I'm just like, I just wanna I've gotten numb to it. In the art, like making art, creating
you have
content,
to be, right?
Yeah,
because your head's in the fucking blast furnace, man. It's like
yeah.
you are. Your show is like hyper analyzed,
yeah.
in the most insane way, and not just hyper analyzed by like dopes who are like whatever, super like
smart people,
super
man.
Smart people breaking yeah. you down, like to, you know.
I can't even read it. I'm
P.S.
just. Yeah.
By the way, I'm saying this at more as a.
And it's Dan too, you know. Obviously Harmon, you know, like, but yeah.
I'm imagining. It's not like I'm like.
I'm the dummy of the
it's
group.
It's not like I just. No, you're not.
I'm the Garfunkel.
Ah, please.
No, Garfunkel was great, but I'm just saying.
You're not a dummy, and you're not the Garfunkel. Uncle, even I don't know, but I have. I'm not. I just want to like say, it's not like I see. Mostly, anytime I've read anything about the stuff you're making, it's like worshipful. And I do, and I don't want to get too far off course, but
yeah.
I do want to bring up a time that I went with Dan, and you were there. I don't know what it was.
I think it was ATX in Texas or in Austin, wasn't it?
No, this
oh,
was at
no,
a comic book store
signing.
Or
yeah, I remember that. It was like the Kid Robot release of like this cool sculpture thing. Yeah,
dude,
that was
I had
wild.
Never seen that before.
Yeah,
and I have only experienced that level of intensity, and an intense kind of silence, an intense murmuring silence. In religious places.
That was so, I was so drunk. I had to drink. I was like, I need to drink.
I
get so nervous. I
was blasted, man. I was high. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
But it was, but that.
It was, it's, yeah.
It was like a religion. It was like being, you guys were like priests. These people were gathering around you and they were silently waiting for you to say anything.
Yeah.
And they were cherishing these icons in a really intense way.
It's weird and it's hard for me to appreciate it. You know what I mean? Because
sure.
I'm almost like I'll never not be this way where I'm just a fucking
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's crazy to see. And but I try to just bring it down to like, hey, look, like if I meet somebody or like if I'm at a convention or whatever, I do my fucking best to try to just bring it back
yeah.
down. Like, look, we're both, I don't know how, when every situation is different, but it's like, I'm just a person.
Yeah, man.
And I got really lucky. And like, yeah, like you are perceiving me on this pedestal, but honestly, I'm just like you. And you know, just, let's just be people and hang out. But when you're doing these crazy signings like that, there's no time to sort of, you know, have those moments with everybody. It's kind
no.
of just this sort of water wheel of people coming and very surreal. And it's like some people will that's just fuel like the adoration and the the compliments and it just fills their cup, you know. But for me, it doesn't do anything for me. I don't take it for granted, and I don't look down upon it. I'm just kind of like, I'm almost outside of it.
It feels like you sense the illusory nature of it. Like you get this feeling of like whatever this particular dance or game is.
Yeah.
The intensity with which people are playing.
I'm thinking, you know, in 10 years you're going to be, you'll probably still have fond memories of the show and an appreciation of me and Dan, but you'll be fanatical about some other thing, right? And it's like, so... Or, you know, getting more morose, it's like, we're all going to die, so let's have a... I mean, that's a shitty way to look at it. But,
why?
But, well, I don't know. I'm trying not to think about life. I'm trying to be more in the moment and enjoy existing, but and not be so like, I'm going to die. Who gives a shit?
Nihilistic.
Yeah. I'm trying to be less nihilistic. But no, like, yeah, it's interesting. I really do appreciate the connection that people have. I mean, honestly, like, you know, it's weird because that was never really the plan. It was an unplanned, you know.
You know, if I could, I would take this conversation we're having and I would have you be the voice of one of those Mayan kids. And this is as he's talking, as they're taking him to the top of the pyramid to stab him with a fucking dagger.
He's just it's so funny.
Because you know, it's like, there's this, I think there's a thing built into us that like, when that level of intensity and adoration is
that's a great way to contextualize what
yeah, anyway, man. Yeah. Cuz it's scary because like they can turn on you.
Sure.
You know, what is that great, there's that great song by Loudon Wainwright, Saw Your Name in the Paper, and how does it go? It's like
I don't know that band, but like,
oh dude, it's Rufus Wainwright's dad. He's okay. This amazing folk singer, but the lyrics are,
I don't know that band.
The band.
it's like I love Mazzy Star. She's cute.
Great band.
It's like, no, wait. Anyway, sorry.
The line goes like, take the money, take the love, take all the people, give the people, they are dying, and somehow you help them live. It goes, Jesus, the crushing lyric is like, the people will destroy you. That love will turn to hate. But right now you must scratch it, that itch that's grown so great. Saw your name in the paper. Saw your name.
That's a great lyric.
It's a great lyric, and it's a little dire if you ask me, but it's also, there is that.
It's true, kind of, though.
When I was at this thing, and I was high as a kite, so my senses are off a little bit, the feeling was weird, man. It reminded me of when I've been at, like, a cult rituals. I don't mean like it's literally that.
Yeah.
But I mean like there was a certain type of thickness in the air that would make me, if I were in your shoes, a little unnerved by it.
That's why I, you know, a couple of shots before and just sip vodka or whatever,
right,
during. But I mean, yeah, I mean, but it's also like I don't want that to come off like, you know, I need to do that to deal with these people or something, because I'm always just humbled and blown away, and our fan base is incredibly diverse, and I feel like, you know, you hear a lot of stuff like Rick and Morty fans, you know, the meme of like, oh, they're all fucking douchebag or whatever.
Is that real?
Well, I don't know if it is. I've seen whispers of it here and there, and like, you know, there's memes where it's like, oh, you have to be really smart to enjoy the show, you know, there's stuff like that. But like, I've met a ton of fans, and I've done a couple of like conventions just meeting fans. And I've not come across a single shitty person. Like every and insane diversity, not in just gender, ethnicity, yeah, age. I mean, it's like all over the place.
You made the funniest show ever. It's so good.
Dan and I did.
Dan, of course. Yes. I'm assuming people. I know you guys.
We'll just
made
say
the
for the record, if
I'm saying we also meeting you and Dan, and okay, the sum total of the crew and yeah, everything, it's like, to me, it's like they're really like. the beautiful thing about the internet, the hyperconnectivity that we experience is so incredible.
And the writers and the blah, blah, blah.
Everybody.
The
we sum total
great...
of all nature, the fucking cosmic thing that blew out time and space to form the atoms.
The atoms that are in our,
the quasar.
The space dust that we're made of.
The space butterfly, that came together to make this.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. But to me, what inevitably ends up happening is this, like, you know, some croaking toad has to blow out insults anytime anything gets to a certain... It's just a statistical probability.
That's right.
That once you get to a certain place, there's going to be a croaking toad who's got some... is going to come wobbling out of his swamp. The fans, I guess y'all think you're so smart, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like, this is an inevitability. It's a poisoner, essentially.
Sure.
A shit disturber.
Yeah.
But, like... every time I've watched Rick and Morty, I just laugh my ass off, and it's good. You made something great.
Yeah, we definitely try to have fun. I mean, so it's funny because, you know, art, making things, like just creating something, I feel zero inhibitions. I feel zero fear. I'm not worried what people are going to think. I don't care if people are going to hate it.
Yeah.
It's very weird because that's in complete opposition to a lot of other shit in my head.
Yeah.
When it comes to... So, like, for the video game, I have a video game coming out called Trover Saves the Universe.
Didn't it just come out? I saw it on PlayStation.
You can pre-order it right now.
Okay.
But it hits May 31st on PS4 and then June 4th on PC.
Cool.
Yeah. And it's both VR and traditional. You could play it either way, blah, blah, blah.
But, that's a great... I wish they would do that more.
Me too, man. Yeah. I mean, well, I can get into how that happened because it was a happy accident. But the point is, like, making that game, you know, I was just like... you know, obviously spend a lot of time breaking the story. Like, that's important. You want a decent structural narrative to follow. But, like, once we got into each level, we break the level, you know, narratively, and make sure that plugs into the larger structure of the story, of the full story. But then it was like, let's just go nuts. So, like, I would just drink, and, like, we'd have our level master planner, so we'd know all the lines we needed to get. I mean, thousands and thousands of dice. I mean, just crazy. And so what we learned, the best process was just like, okay, what do I got to do next? What's the next thing? Oh, this is the part where Trover, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, got it. And then I just fucking riff and make up shit, and I'm just drinking and having fun. And
what
it
a
just,
joy.
And it was so fun, and it was so... in the end result, ultimately, like, if there were days that were bad days that, you know, I was like, I wasn't in the zone, or I wasn't feeling the best, we would just chuck it out and do it again. And then there's days where it's like, just shit, I could never, ever come up with sitting at a computer typing, ever.
Right.
Just shit that just came out of my mouth that's so fucking funny and ridiculous. And the end result is this game where it just feels so different than other games, because most games the studios don't function that way. Like, they tend to sort of...
Fuck no.
The scripts are very tight. And then
let somebody ramble on the mic.
Never.
You mentioned a level master planner. Is that an actual title?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's just this fucking endless document that has every single line of the game, everything we would need for dialogue.
Oh,
every,
my God.
Yeah, it's we have like over 20 hours of dialogue in this game. Like, if you just sit and hang out with characters in VR or just on your TV, they'll have full fucking crazy conversations that are hilarious.
Well, dude, I mean, this was a, you know, you released Accounting.
Oh, yeah, with William Pugh and the Crows guys. Yeah.
And it felt like it had
a lot
of that to it.
Yeah.
And that
this is
so...
like times, I mean, Accounting's short. This game's like, this will take about 6 to 8 hours, probably closer to 8 hours to just play the game. But if you want to hang out, you can.
That's it.
It's crazy. Yeah, you can be in there for a while. But the point I was trying to make is, in the art, I'm very free and stuff.
Yeah.
But I found myself in the last like year and a half, maybe a little more, completely silenced on social media. On, like, I don't want to make a joke anymore. I don't want to say my opinion anymore.
You're scared.
I don't even want to look at the comment. I'll post a thing, but it'll, it's always, whenever I post on social, I'm kind of mostly on Instagram now. I kind of got the fuck away from Twitter. I still have it, and I look at it occasionally, but like, Twitter scares me. Harmon was saying something interesting, because we were talking about this, and he's like, I think if you want to say something on there, create something. Like he does these little music videos, if you've seen them. Right. They're really great. He did one for my birthday. It was fucking incredible.
Yeah.
That meant a lot to me that he did that. I was like, that was so fucking sweet of him. But like, he's like, if you create something, even if there's something in there that could potentially outrage people, it's art, and it's potentially something that most people can't do. So they're not going to see it through the same lens as me typing a joke, tweeting it out, that some people might be outraged over or not understand the context of it being a joke. Remember when jokes were, we all sort of had the social agreement that jokes were jokes? Remember that? Remember when they were in the frame of, hey, this is a joke?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I'm going to play this out in my life. Doesn't mean that this is the content of my character. I just have a dark sense of humor and here's a joke. Nowadays, you can't do that at all. So it's like, I've been effectively like, all right, I just feel, not that I need to fucking spout my little bullshit through a little digital bullhorn, but like, I definitely don't feel comfortable. Like an idea will come into my head or a thought and I'm just like, oh, I should, no, wait, no, never mind. I'm not going to say shit.
Well, because the idea was like, there was a feeling that was more like a kind of like playground or something where we're just like playing games here. We're like fucking around, man. Like it's just like we're making stuff. Oh, look, there's mud. Let's run over here. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Frank fell and skinned his knee. Oh, hell, let's go over here. Climb that wall. What's that?
Yep.
It was fun. Nothing meant anything. It was a game. There wasn't a sense of like, if I make this joke, it is an indication that I am connected to a dark cobble of evil humans.
Yeah.
And I'm basically like a swamp bubble coming out of like some infinite hive of doom people. I was just saying some shit that in the moment seemed funny. Also, I was kind of hammered when I said it.
Yeah.
And it seemed funny then, but none of it, I promise you, I'm not killing. There's no fucking like hostile, you know, situation under my house where I'm like getting to tourists and like flaying them.
Yeah.
It was just a joke. But now these days have changed a little bit. And what's really fucked up about it is that when you start like hearing about these Russian bot or troll farms.
Oh, and then you don't know what's real and what's fake. And that asshole that said the thing that bummed you out, is that just somebody being paid by a...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so there's that's where kind of where we've hit this, like, I think of a point right now, a wobbly point in our interconnectivity through technology. We just have to deal with the fact that the immune system of the technology isn't strong enough to withstand outside influences. So basically, like, it's like having a house, your Twitter account or whatever the account is, it's like having a house with a billion doors and you can't shut all the doors and you don't, and there's no,
and some of them don't even have actual doors. They're just openings. You know what I mean? Big, beautiful arches.
Yeah, man.
Like the Flintstones house. Remember that? They just had holes for windows. Pretty sure they did.
It's a real mess, man, because if your fucking house has all those holes in it, you're going to get the shit pummeled out of you.
Mosquitoes are going to be coming in.
The robot! But it's literally like, what's so funny about it is that, you know, in the, like the model of the thing or the way we're modeling it right now, which is, it's not going to be like this for a while. I mean, this is like when people used to have, my grandmother would tell me her phone number was like 8. Or whatever, when on St. Simon's Island in Georgia, like her phone number was something like 814 or something, or you'd pick up the phone and an operator would answer. Let me talk to Linda on 49 Flower Lane. Hold on. And she'd plug a thing in and, hello?
Yeah.
That was what it used to be. And that's where we're at now with technology. It's just the difference is, so we're wide open, basically.
Yeah.
And what that means is, like, if you have a business, theoretically, whatever it may be, and you have a competitor.
Yeah.
That competitor could literally manufacture fake things and swarm your ass and make you seem like a monster.
It's scary.
It's temporarily scary.
I mean, even
scary.
even just being a public figure, you know, which I always kind of said, I was like, man, animation's my jam, because you can make stuff and no one really knows what you look like, or, and then when the show started to take off, it's still kind of that. I mean, it's still pretty great, because like I don't get recognized a ton. It happens more than I ever thought it would, but it's also because I went, I did Ethan you know, H3H3. They're like YouTube. They're friends of mine, but they have a big YouTube channel.
And okay.
He asked me. He's like, hey, we're starting a podcast. Will you be our first guest? And I'm like, absolutely, yeah, I'd love to do that. And then like, you know, a week later, he's like, yeah, so we got the couch and like, oh man, the set looks really great. And I'm like,
do
you mean? Like, what set? Like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh yeah, no, like it's gonna be great. I'm like, wait, is there cameras there? Oh fuck, yeah. Anyway, so I was like, oh man, but I already.
The old video podcast trap. Let me tell you, man, that's the worst. When you go stumbling in, there's a fucking green screen, yeah. 18 cameras, looking lights like, everywhere. Yeah,
you're looking like you just crawled out of bed. You're like, wait, what? I thought you said podcast.
No, that sucks. But I mean, not that their show sucks.
No, not being prepared for it
is a fucking terror.
Well, I at least was. I had enough. I found out, you know, a few weeks before. Like, I found out, but when I first said yeah, I was like, but I was just like, oh man, I've been able to kind of. You know, have this amazing best of both worlds where it's like I've got the creative, I've got a show. It's like it's exciting and it's like, but I also have this certain level of anonymity. Like all these amazing voice actors, like Maurice LaMarche, and I mean even to a certain extent, like Phil Hendry, and like I mean all these guys, they get recognized.
Yeah,
but like by and large, they can kind of just. Walk through the raindrops. They can go shopping at Ralph's. They they don't have to even think about it. They can just be normal.
That's
you know?
Right.
I can't imagine being like a really famous celebrity, like an actor, you know, and how that would affect your. For me, it would be like cripple. It would just fuck me all up. Yeah, I would just become more and more like reclusive and
paranoid. Reclusive gates within gates within gates.
I think so. I don't know.
Maybe, lonely.
I think so. I think about it. I'm like, if you know, and it was just, it'll never happen for me, but it's, which is good, you know, but it's like, yeah, it's like, and I should clarify, anyone who has ever recognized me and come up to me, knock on fucking wood, has been just the sweetest, nicest people. I've never had an asshole ever approach me and be a dick.
I hear, what do you know what I hear from you, man? I hear like you want to put out there, I hope I don't sound like I'm complaining. I'm very grateful for my success, and I love the fact that people love what I'm making.
It's just interesting for me, because I'm still I hope I'm never anything other than outside of it, looking into it, and kind of going, "That's weird. This is all weird."
You don't want to lose that stance, man.
No way.
When you lose that stance, there's nothing unique anymore.
No fucking way.
Because you were the kid with the freckles. You were the insecure person, and now you're getting this rare access to a kind of experience that I'm sure many people on the planet are curious, to say the least, about. Like, what would that be like? And so, I think there's something really beautiful about the way you're sort of reporting in from the outside,
yes,
so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, we want to hear it, and because it's something you like, you think about peaks, you know, in Western society, peaks. And whether you like it or not, you guys are on a peak.
Yeah.
And when we are all like, what's it like up there? And to hear, it's a little scary, and actually, I still hate myself. He still hates himself. What did he say? He hates Hillary Clinton? What's his fucking problem?
Burn his house down. Burn his house down.
Yeah, but that, so to me, it's like the also what you, as I'm listening to you talk, it makes me think of this thing I read, which is that to put someone on a pedestal is an aggression. So if you want to like, no matter what, if you find yourself in the presence of a person, even if you have deep respect for them, but you're elevating them to a place above where you're at, or where your mom is at, or your dad is at, or your family's at, not only are you being aggressive to yourself, you're being aggressive to them, because essentially it's like a non-consensual game of make-believe, which is, you know, because you're the person who keeps getting pedestalized, so to speak, that though you're brilliant and your mind is like outflowing beautiful things into the world, you have this sense of like, guys, I don't know why it's happening or what's happening, but I'm literally just like you. I got lucky, something happened, no difference. I got lucky, something happened, something flows out of me sometimes and I love it, but I'm just like you. But they're like, no, you're not. I want to touch your feet. Let me worship you, please. And that is an aggression. It's non-consensual, and it's like...
It's really interesting to say, to hear the idea of putting someone on a pedestal is a non-consensual... What did you say exactly?
It's an aggression. It's a non-consensual game of make-believe.
Make-believe. A non-consensual game of make-believe. That's fucking really interesting.
You literally find yourself in the shit position of having to be like... Now you have to be like, number one, I'm not doing false modesty. I'm not doing like false humility. I'm
literally telling you,
like, whatever the thing is, like, you like what I made. This isn't me.
Yeah.
That's not me. It's a collaborative
effort. You know what I really do love about all of the success, though, is I've gotten to meet so many fucking interesting, amazing people, like that I would have never met ever. And not just like famous people and stuff, but like just people that I just random people that I would have never met in a million years that are just fucking amazing, or, you know, have, I don't know, like they're struggling through something, and I can, not to sound like I'm some fucking Mother Teresa, but it's like, it's nice to try to help them. I sent a friend literally four really long things from your podcast and then a couple of appearances that you were on Joe Rogan's podcast talking about depression, talking about just really powerful shit that I sent to someone who I met recently that I was like, I really think this is going to help you. Significantly, you really, really need to listen to this. Cause like this person is very much depressed and very much in that place of like, I can't even, you know, can't even muster the energy to go like even just walk around the block level. And I'm like, just listen to this stuff because it's really powerful.
Glue trap. I call that the glue trap.
The glue trap.
The mice get on the glue trap.
Yeah. Like, no, you. I think you literally say it in one of the things I sent. That you make that analogy. And yeah, that kind of stuff is really, really awesome to be able to sort of meet people, get to know them, talk to them. Like, and people are very. I'm a Pisces. Not that I'm some astrology lunatic, but I'm very kind of open and. I like to listen, and I'm very empathic, and like when I meet somebody, if we're hanging out or whatever, like I want to know, and people tend to open up to me, and then I don't know, it's interesting, and then I want to try to like help, I want to like fix people,
yeah, man.
I don't know, like yeah,
it's, you have a lot of compassion.
I think it's a thing that I've been missing in my life for a while, that part of things, and I'm just kind of recently getting back into that of meeting new people, and like I don't know, it that kind of stuff will help fill the empty, you know, cup.
Yeah, because that's the intent, man. This is what I'm just learning about this right now. It's like this guy said meditation with our they're all so sweet, like saying that they come down on you is not the way to put it, but like we were talking and I was like, I don't have intention. Well, you know, I just do stuff and there's not really any intention behind it. I just kind of, you know, do it, you know, without intent. I don't know why I was afraid of intention. But I remember I don't remember exactly what he said, but he really, like, in the way only someone who like is like teaching you, he really like got me with his response. Was just, I think something on the lines of, that is such horse shit.
Yeah.
It's like, you're just saying that. You don't mean, of course you have intention.
Yeah.
And it's like, when you meditate, one of the ideas is before you meditate, you create an intent. And the intent is, I hope this in some way helps everybody. And then when you're done meditating, you dedicate the merit of the practice. And they have various versions of this prayer, which is like, something along the lines of like, may all sentient beings be happy, may they have food in their stomach, mm-hmm. may they no longer suffer. And so this is called, I just learned this word, so I'm glad you're bringing this up, bodhicitta is what it's called. And it's, as I understand it, it's the beginning of like a rising sun in your heart. And it's the sun that wants to help. It's like the thing inside of you that's like wants to help people.
Yeah.
And it is the only thing that matters. Everything else is literally irrelevant.
Yeah.
Which is why it's such a fucking pain in the ass to be selfish, man. It's like,
how? I mean, I'm super selfish in other ways. So, you know what I mean? There's no doubt about that.
No, dude, listen. But, yeah. This is the... as someone who suffers from depression fairly regularly, and I have to be very careful about it. I have warning signs. I know, like, the bed's not made. There's shit on the floor. I'm not exercising. It's like,
watch
out, man, because you're going to get, you got to go outside. You got to go be around people. You're going to, anyway, I know that one of the, and I don't want to say, like, for those of you out there who are depressed, I am not trying to produce it's your fault thing.
Oh,
but
sure.
But from my own anecdotal evidence, I will say that something that seems to be present in my depression is an abnormal fixation on myself in the negative. So it's like, which is literally selfishness, but it's not even like the good kind of selfishness where you're like, give me that. That's mine, motherfucker. Ooh, I need to chill.
It's
literally selfishness in the sense negative where I'm like, you fucking piece of shit. You fuck.
It's almost kind of, I guess, a form of narcissism too, right?
Reverse narcissism?
Yeah, it's like, is there a term for that? Yeah, that's crazy.
Not loving yourself, but being obsessed and absorbed in hating elements of your identity, being hyper-compressed. Basically, to me, what it is, and this is like one of the concepts with compassion is like compassion can't happen without space. So you need space. In other words, like right now we're in this big fucking space chatting with each other. It's awesome.
It's beautiful. But
you and I were in like a little metal box right now, shoved together with these microphones. It was starting to get hot. We'd start getting a little annoyed with each other. Like if I move my, you know, especially if we were in this box for like, I don't know, 100 years.
Okay. 100.
Can you imagine? Every little movement would start fucking sucking.
Sure,
it would be, it would agony. You would hate every hair of my beard. You would hate every exhalation of my stinky breath. It would all be a nightmare thing if we then expand the size of that box to the size of the entire planet, then it's great, man. We can be really good friends. So similarly, we're jammed into a box, but the box is ourselves.
Our bodies are meat husks. That's crazy.
So we're super hyper compressed into our identity, right? And so this
these meat husks of ours, huh?
Meat boxes,
man. How what do you think of that meat husk over there, huh?
Pretty. Yeah, look at that meat.
Look at that meat husk.
You have a beautiful meat husk, my dear.
I want to. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god.
I want to
suckle at your
take
meat
that meat husk home, but I'll leave the soul here if you don't mind.
I want to wear your meat husk on your back.
Oh my god! Can you imagine if that was a kink? Like you're just into meat husks.
Well, it is a kink. I mean, people love
murder,
wearing other people's
of course.
Skin.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bunch of serial killers and monsters out there, but or I guess there. I feel like there used to be more serial killers back in the 70s, 80s.
Well, there were more like
60s.
There was like a
they're more prolific.
There was a creativity boom when it came to
it. It was like, ooh,
there's a time
this
when
speaks
it was like,
to me.
You need a hook if you're going to kill a
bunch of people. Yeah, it's like, I'm going to be the Zodiac one.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to be the one that just fucking gets away with it and breaks it. Like Ted Bundy
the
just
fucking
sneaks out.
Dogs talks to you. Yeah, and then Bundy ruined.
Bundy just like fucking, that guy, boy, oh boy, he's like trying to catch a fish with your hands. He just kept running away, slipping out the window.
In him. He was possessed by a
demon.
He's
full of shit. Are you talking about because like at the end he was like like the stuff about him being all religious and stuff?
No, he like I think it's called a Rosh Kasha or something.
Oh, he literally
Demon got in him because he would talk about it. He's like, I had to get super hammered.
Do you believe in that kind of stuff? Like,
fuck yeah.
You do. See, I you know what? I don't not believe in anything. I'm not like some I know that's not true kind of person.
Yeah.
I'm very much like, I don't know anything. I don't know what anything is. Well, obviously there's like, you know, proven scientific and medical and like, you know, mostly historical information that can be proven.
Sure.
You know, but then there's stuff that's like, we just don't know, man. We don't fucking know anything.
That's right.
And then there's human issues that we just don't know. Like, did that happen? Did that person do that thing? We don't know. There's evidence. And then the more evidence or the more, it's like, okay, no, they did that thing. Or no, they definitely did. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
sure.
But like, so I tend to stay in the kind of agnostic kind of center.
Oh, that's a good place to hang out. Yeah.
Well, I'm incredibly open to all kinds of stuff. I just don't want to believe that shit because Yeah, like, I don't know.
Maintain agnosticism or you'll embarrass yourself. I hang out there. You know, I like, in other words, when I say, fuck yeah, I believe in demons, I don't mean like I permanently believe in demons, or I don't even mean in like in 10 minutes I think there's going to.
Yeah.
I just mean it's like it's a thought experiment sometimes.
Yeah.
When I'm looking at a person like Ted Bundy, for example.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think, well, he's a sociopathic narcissist or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay. But really when I'm looking at him and I'm like, that dude basically alien style, like burrowed through a slat.
Oh, yeah.
Wormed his way out a window and then ran into the fucking mountains and said it was the best time in his life.
Survived and then managed to skip across the country and kill a bunch more people.
That's
and
a demon.
Yeah, yeah.
That,
no,
to me,
that,
it works
yeah, yeah, yeah.
to just say,
yes,
that
yeah,
guy's got
demon.
A demon riding
yeah,
him
yeah.
around. You
no,
know?
You're right. You're right. That's not normal. But, you know, nowadays, it's like, what do you, what, there's just no, nobody's playing the game anymore. There too many cameras, maybe. DNA evidence too good. Forensic stuff too powerful. Like, how, like, I'm trying to figure out why are there not as many, I'm not asking for them. They're,
yeah.
That's terrible, but.
They're out there.
I was thinking about it, and I'm like, man, there used to be, like, real creepy fucking weirdos that just would go on these horrible
back
murder
in the
spree.
Good old days. When I was back, your age, back. We had colorful serial killers. Now you just get stranglers. Who gives a fuck about some boring old strangler?
Now there's just mass shootings.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
all happen at once.
Yeah, yeah.
Not these fun, long, drawn-out mysteries.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's doing this? And everyone's afraid and locking their windows, and girls with brown hair are like, stay indoors, girls. There's a murderer on the loose on the West Coast.
Yeah, man, I wore butterfly wings, dude. I wore butterfly wings and a cape.
The good old days.
I fucking figured out a way to come cyanide, brother. Now, what are you doing? You're a strangler? It's boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I think that, like, we have entered into a very, unfortunately, an age of anesthetized horror, it seems like. It's like not only is the mechanism to show us this shit being like anesthetized, like the saddest thing is like those kids who got the Parkland kids.
Yeah.
They're apparently trying to make it so that they have to upload the videos of the shootings, the next one that happens. They want it. They're signing things that say, show my body.
Look at this.
Look and look.
Face
and
this.
Face this.
Yeah.
As it is.
I think we need that. I mean, I personally, yeah, fuck, man. I mean, I can't watch that shit. But I already get it. Like, I'm already like, look, that kind of, like, I'm already there. I'm not the person that needs to see it. You know what I mean? There are people I think that do need to see that shit and for it to really sink in. Like, this is happening all over the place. It's just a fucking crazy phenomenon. I don't know how the fuck or why or I don't know what is causing it. Is it just mental health issues that we're not handling in the country?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I do know that the idea that those kids have, which is brilliant, can be applied subjectively. Because it's like, this is the shit I'm learning right now.
Yeah.
It's like,
I think everyone should just have to take psilocybin or acid. Everyone. I think it, like, as soon as you turn, you know, whatever age you want to put on it, 21, you have to just sit down with a shaman and just fucking take a fuck ton of it and just go through a spiritual journey.
Yeah.
Come out the other side and you will have more empathy for humanity. You'll have more
connection to
nature.
You'll
have a deeper understanding of what you are and that this whole thing is a big fuck, like, you're gonna die, and it like all this like grindy like you know materialistic like you know motivations I think kind of melt away a little bit. I mean, sure, you're still gonna have the people like me that buy toys and you know whatever, but like the sort of like I need to make a trillion fucking dollars that you can never spend it ever. I mean, not, I don't know. I think or the political, like, you know, I'm gonna be a politician that has a very, like, you know, anti-people, for lack of a
anti-people well,
perspective.
You know, man, earlier you were saying, like, I don't want to talk, you know, the whole death thing and the nihilism thing. And there was a time in my life when I used to really, like, feel like death was a bad thing. And I just don't feel that anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that like edgelordy. I don't feel that anymore. I mean, like, I think that it's a very beautiful and a beautiful, beautiful thing that happens to all of us, and that the in the way that those kids are like, oh, I want you to show the picture of my dead body. I think like there's something really beautiful if you have the courage to do it.
Yeah.
To turn your eyes and face your own mortality. And not just your own mortality in the sense of like the long-term thing, which is like, who's going to, like, you know, everyone has this crazy ass fantasy.
Sure.
Which is they're going to deathbed fantasy. Like all these people have this deathbed fantasy.
Yeah.
They have this crazy idea that they're going to be laying in their deathbed, maybe some quilts, the family around, some dogs here and there. And they're going to be like, I love you, Dad. I love you. Goodbye. It doesn't work like that.
No.
Your fucking mind breaks.
Yeah.
You start stammering. You're spinning through the past into the future. You fall asleep most of the time. Maybe you wake up for a second to like say some inarticulate thing. There's a postman up in there. We got to get George Clooney down to this Amazon. You fall asleep. That's what death looks like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so what happens is people create this absolute fantasy about the way they're gonna fucking die, which is like, well, you know, I have time because, you know, eventually I'm gonna just calm it down and be like, okay, now I'm gonna love life. But it's like, shut the fuck up. Here's what's gonna happen. You're gonna wake up a little confused one morning, you're gonna go to take a piss, and then you're gonna come to and you're gonna be in the hospital. There's gonna be someone looking at you talking, but you won't know what they're saying. Their mouth is gonna be like,
oh,
and you'll
fall
back asleep. Then you're gonna wake up again, there'll be maybe some tubes on you.
Yeah.
You'll hear your heart go, boop, boop. You're always like, I can't really fucking breathe. Is this a dream? Pfft, gone.
That's
how it happens.
Yeah.
And also, when you sort of create this fantasy of the way that you're going to die, or you do this trust fund bullshit with your years. Oh, I've got 20, 10, whatever you think you have.
Yeah.
Fuck that. You got nothing, man. Because And also, you have no past. That's the other important thing. Your past has been annihilated. Everything before this moment is absolutely gone. And everything after this doesn't exist
yet. That's right.
So all there is this place
here. It's so fucking weird. Well, fourth dimensional beings would disagree, but... Us third dimensional beings, for sure, are just slices of right now, literally right now, all the time.
You mean the fourth dimensional beings who like see us as these kinds of like meat snakes coiling through time?
Yeah, the long, like from a little baby all the way to the fucking
decrepit. The baby, the combo,
sperm.
Then splitting out.
And even before, I guess, how far back does it go
it
with
goes
these
goes all the way
dimensional...
back to the Big Bang, I guess.
They're fucking fourth dimensional badass fucking people or characters.
Well, so do you spend much time thinking about that kind of stuff? It seems like you do.
Yeah, definitely.
And you study chaos magic and stuff like that.
I don't know. Maybe what's I don't know. Maybe
it like sometimes wraps up around this idea of like one of the aspects of it is agnosticism. So it's like Robert Anton Wilson would talk about it, you know, just like maintaining this spirit of like, I'm going to manifest a ritual right now to contact one of these fourth dimensional beings, but I'm not going to do it like I believe it. I'm just going to do it to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
So in a less absolutely insane yet still insane way of saying it would be, when you see the poems in the beginning of some of the ancient Greek writing, that's the invocation to the muse.
Yeah.
That's literally like a prayer to a fourth dimensional being to come through me so that I can manifest your form into this dimension.
Interesting.
Let me be, or another way to put it would be, I want to be a landing strip for UFOs that are flying out of the fourth dimension in the form of inspiration and coming through me and populating this dimension with some creativity civilization.
I feel that way when I feel like I'm tapping into that when I get really high, just weed, like which I don't really ever do because I have to suffer about an hour and a half of fucking existential panic, like pure legitimate panic attack.
Whoa.
And then once that subsides, it's just insane, like just ideas, I'm channeling something.
Yes.
It's insanity. All these ideas are just coming, and I haven't done it in a long time. But real quick, I want to get back to the idea, the thing you said about the every moment before this is gone, right? So, do you ever think that, two things? One, because of that fact, that everything preceding the current moment could potentially be changed, right? On a mass scale. What I mean by that is, you know, the Mandela effect, right?
Yeah, sure.
Not literally that, but the idea that like that is sort of a sign or a... I think a lot of those are bullshit. It's just a bunch of us I didn't pay that close attention, you know? But some of it maybe. But the idea being that like let's say we're in a simulation and the people running the simulation... You smell that?
Skunk.
Getting high, dude.
Yeah,
no,
man.
No. Is that a skunk or is somebody smoking weed?
That means you live in California.
Okay, great. So, anyway, imagine, you know, somebody decided to pause the simulation right now and then delete me or delete. And not just like I'm disappearing. You all of a sudden the mic drops and you're like, "What? Where'd you go?" It's like, no. I'm erased from everyone's mind. Any deeds, any things I've done are erased.
Yes.
You're not sitting here with me. You're sitting here with someone else because I didn't come, and you maybe.
Yeah.
And nobody knows I existed, right?
Like yes.
That, and it's because it's all behind us. It's all
sure.
And so the idea of like, just like if we were in a simulation, that's such a. Okay, now so take that concept, right? The ability that sort of, you know, the potential for things to just have been retroactively changed,
yes,
to the point where there's an entire mass reboot, and everyone their minds are wiped of the thing,
yes,
and the thing doesn't exist, and now we still have you know, Hidden Treasure cereal on the shelf, whatever stupid fucking difference. Which is a great cereal, by the way. Look it up. But
no shit.
It's delicious. But probably horrible for you, though, is a 90s cereal. But anyways, now the idea that the things you do, the choices you make, so going into the future, that could potentially change, like slipping into different multiverses.
Yes.
Like if I were to. Like right now, like I'm like exercising. I'm like just to claw myself out of this depression that,
yep,
I've been in. I'm like exercising. I'm eating healthy. I'm not so much dieting as I am like, okay, no sugar. I cut sugar out completely, which,
yeah,
is the first time in my life I've ever done that.
Wow.
And it's
how long?
I'm two weeks and a couple days.
Good
in.
Good fucking Lord.
Yeah,
good job, man.
It's crazy. I've never done it before, ever. But
wow.
I cut it all out, and then I'm eating. You know, it's crazy. Like you start to like actually like spinach with some. Like saute spinach with some coconut oil and a little bit of salt and,
yeah,
pepper, and you're like, that shit would make me fucking want to puke, and,
yeah,
now I'm like, no, it's fucking good. It actually tastes good,
it's
right?
Like, wow.
And that's after two weeks and 3 days.
Did
or
you
something.
Get sick? Did you have any like withdrawals or anything?
Oh yeah, depression. I mean, my worsened like energy. I mean, sugar addiction is fucking. I don't think people realize how powerful
they
a withdrawal. But yeah, it was really hard. But I feel good now. I don't even really crave it. I more crave carbs than anything, which is I also cut out the carbs. But I had dreams last night that I was just like, fuck it. And I was just eating. And I woke up and I'm like, thank God that was a dream. I was just eating all this shit. But anyways, the point is, like, if there's a version of me right now that's still depressed, still eating shit, still – I wouldn't be here. I'd be like, Duncan, I can't – like,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
I'm sorry. Either make up an excuse or, you know, whatever it is. You know, but then there's this version that's what I'm manifesting, which is like, fuck that. I'm going to do all this. And then what's interesting about that is it literally is fracturing the multiverse in different,
yeah,
directions for the future. So the past can be rebooted if we're in a simulation, which I think we might be, anytime. And then the future can be completely changed based off of your own choices day to day and,
right,
what you decide to do. And it could be anything from health stuff, or it could be like, fuck it, I'm going to go do open mic stand-up right now, even though I suck. Or I mean, the dark, horrible shit is like these people that are going and I don't want to encourage any bad shit, but like there's these people that are doing these horrible things to people, you know, on a mass scale. And it's like, that's fragmenting and changing the future in negative ways. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, it's like, it's kind of like, there's a lot of cool ways to think about it.
Yeah.
It's fun to imagine it as a form of locomotion.
Yeah.
You can imagine that your identity is a spaceship traveling through the multiverse, and,
yeah,
by creating a consistent, doing anything consistently over time is similar to like finding some coordinates and staying on that path.
Yes, yes.
And the more you do that.
And shifting more and more, yeah, into that version of the multiverse and like settling,
yeah,
into it. And then what potentially,
cool,
changes around you. Are you actually crossing over? You,
well,
know, is the world going to get better? If you make better choices,
yeah,
and you better yourself, are you going to actually click over into another version of reality, another multiverse that's better, where people start to get more sane and people start to love each other more? And like, I don't know. It's an interesting thing, man.
It's sort of like there's this, like, in Buddhism, there's the wheel of life. And the wheel of life has the hell of the hungry ghosts, hell, the animal realm, human realm, realm of the jealous gods, and realm of the gods. And so this represents all the potential, like, literal, like, incarnations.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The other idea of it is it's actually, this is the cycle of person's, like, life. And other, so you can sort of, I know that I have experienced hell in this world.
Me too. Yeah.
And in the hell that I've experienced, I've also experienced paradise on the very same stretch of the 101.
I've
been in like a fucking Jacob's ladder hell, where I look around and it is like demons in cars, and the signs are all weird and warped and shit, and like everything's bad, like real bad, right? But I've been on the same stretch of fucking highway, and it's like, whoa, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Beautiful. But not only that, it's like the thing you're talking about is really quite interesting in the sense that the journey you're talking about is sort of like the journey out of one particular dimension into another, and yet it's the same dimension except it's completely different. And what starts happening when you start taking that journey is you start running into fellow travelers.
You know what I mean?
Other people who are making a similar kind of pilgrimage.
Sure.
And then when you run into those people, you kind of like the way we're talking about it, except we're going to blast it out to everybody and they'll be like, you're out of their minds. but what happens is the way it works is you kind of run in and be like, hey, are you a have you seen Jacob's Ladder, by the way?
When I was a kid, and I was just, I was so...
You gotta watch it again.
I need to watch it again. I was too young. I think
so
I was like, what in the fuck is going on? I need to watch it again.
So good. But it's like Jacob's Ladder. It's like his spine, but it represents the transition from the earth realm into paradise, the potential for going into hell. But basically, like, he's conferring with other people in this kind of strange Bardo state, as it's called. And they're all like, did we die? What is happening here?
Yeah.
Are we dead? And it's like, what ends up happening is you start running into people, and a very similar kind of conversation starts happening. Just like, hey, is this real?
Yeah.
This is a simulation,
right?
It's not, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Are you experiencing this too?
Yeah.
And then what's beautiful about it is you start running into people who actually, if you really want to hear some crazy ass shit, who like come back into this particular universe to find people who are ready to make the trip. And they're like, hey, okay, check it out. They're like Strider in Lord of the Rings, you know, the weird paths and the byways and stuff.
Yeah.
And then and I don't mean like literally, like these beings can usually, if they do show up, they don't look like the way you'd expect them to, and they don't stick around that long.
Yeah.
Because their attitude is really one of like, hey, listen, I can show you there's a path here.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to do the path.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. A lot of people don't want to do it. And a lot of times people will start transitioning universes, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it'll start experiencing the illumination.
Yes.
And suddenly everything seems brighter, lighter. The people you're hanging out with are more loving.
Yeah.
People are really like sweet. People start giving you stuff more. You start giving them stuff more. Synchronicities increase. You start making better decisions. You look in the mirror. Your body has changed.
Yeah.
And then you do get into that weird place, which I always get worried about, because I'm like, is this solipsism? Where you're watching the news and suddenly it's like, well, it looks like we might have found life on Mars. And then you're what the fuck? Life on Mars? And then suddenly, you start wondering, like, wait, if I were to maintain this practice, would suddenly it just be like where like civilization would literally split in half? I met someone who told me that. She was like, said with great confidence. She's like, well, right now we're on the part of the spaceship that's undocking from the other civilization. She's like, the civilization that with like Trump and all the autocrats and all that shit, she's like, she said it with such confidence. It was so awesome. She's like, they just turn into this hardcore technological civilization. But the thing that we're on right now, we're about to completely split away from them.
Yeah.
And she said like the bridge connecting the two dimensions is starting to go like shake break, and like, which is why it's a good time to have a great practice
and to buy Bitcoin. No, I'm just kidding. Go.
Definitely buy fucking Bitcoin.
Buy crypto.
High, sell low. Yeah. Buy high, sell low. Buy high, sell low. But the idea is like, the apocalypse.
So you said to have a practice, a good time to have a practice, is what you were saying when I made my dumb joke about crypto.
Fuck. No. I make crypto jokes all day long. I can turn this into, I can do nine.
This is the crypto show now. Welcome to the crypto show. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Yeah.
Welcome to the crypto.
Tales of the crypto.
Let me tell you,
I'm your host.
Unshackle yourself from the blockchain.
Oh, my God. So, wait, no, you were saying it's a good time to have a practice.
Well, no, because, like, you know, you hear all these renditions of this idea in the various world religions, and the renditions are always about, like, some end-of-the-world experience, right?
Yeah.
But clearly what they're talking about is, like, if you are alive and you know you have a limited lifespan, you're living at the end of the world.
The world, yes, yes, exactly. So, all are. Yeah. I remember I literally had a teacher. There was an eclipse when I was a little kid in grade school, and we all had our special little things to look at the eclipse. And I remember a teacher literally saying to the class that this is the generation, our generation, she's talking to us, will be the ones to see the end of the world. And I remember thinking, kind of like going, whoa, that, okay. And we're little, so it's like impressionable. And I'm like, that's wild. Dude, it was crazy. I'll never forget it. It's very vivid.
Wow.
It was so weird. And then I remember later thinking literally what you're saying. I was like, well, I'm going to see the end of the world no matter what, because I'm going to fucking die.
Right, that's right.
But I used to always say, God, it'd be, I mean, this is fucked up. Like, but I used to think, how neat would it be to sort of be alive for some, like, massive fucking asteroid just crashing into Earth, and we all go together, and for us to have like a 2-year warning window to just see what humanity would be like for those 2 years, because I have theories, I have so many ideas of
what do you think would happen.
I think it would be different all over the world in different pockets, but I think by and large, all the bullshit would stop. Like I truly think humanity would begin to. I don't think it would become like a fucking crazy society breaks down madness. I think currency would stop. I think all of that, all these systems we have in place would stop. But it would become like fucking Burning Man. It would be like, everyone would be helping each other. We all are going to die in 2 years. There's no reason to fucking, like, love would, it would just be this fucking utopia. I mean, utopias usually come with all kinds of fucked up shit, like, you know, but I think it would be like an actual, like what most people think of utopia to be, which
Shambhala.
Is this beautiful. Yeah. And I that's what I think would happen. Now there'd be a lot of questions like, okay, well, if you're a airplane pilot, are you going to keep flying people around the country knowing that you got 2 years to go? Are you going to quit? I mean, that the infrastructure is, you know, like, are we going to be going and pumping gas still, like, to drive? Or is there going to be a guy at the gas station? Or is he going to be trying to get to his family to just enjoy the last of the 2 years with whoever the fuck? You know what I mean? So there is, like, crazy infrastructure stuff that I'm not sure what would happen. But I do think, by and large, people would be helping each other. It would be peace on Earth,
well,
I think.
The idea of saving money would seem so stupid.
Right? And it would just be like, look, I'm a farmer. I have food. Like, I think a lot of people wouldn't be selfish in those last 2 years.
Well, I have $1 billion in the bank. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's Brewster's Millions.
And also, by the way, that money would be worthless overnight.
Yeah.
Like, what's $1 billion?
Fucking cares.
How about some carrots?
Yeah, there you go.
How about some fucking, how about some food?
Yeah, that's
you know what I mean? So it literally would be like, I've never been to Burning Man, but I'm pretty familiar
with. You must
go. I know, everyone tells me I need to go.
Go next year.
I've heard so many cool stories from too many different people.
It's a beautiful, beautiful. Beautiful possibility, and what you're saying is, like, I've actually heard that, like, God, I've heard crazy, awesome theories,
yeah,
about how, like, you know, September 11th was like a split in the multiverse,
yeah,
and the other, like, that fucked up the possibility of essentially everything just turning into a thing like Burning Man.
Oh,
but, like,
man.
Anyway, the what you're talking about, I think, is it does remind me a little bit of, like, some of the chaos magic stuff I've read.
Yeah.
And one of the practices in it is, like, you know, just imagine for fun that you are in the part of the universe, the multiverse, so to speak, that is transitioning into this sort of utopia minus the asteroid. Because yeah, one of the sayings is like, well, the world's either going to end in war or festivals, one or the other.
Sure.
And so we're sort of entering a really beautiful age, which is the age of quantum computing. And
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you look up that shit, I was
watching
this.
It's crazy, man.
What the fuck?
It's crazy.
What the fuck?
I know.
I was watching this quantum computing shit, man, and like, I thought I was on like a like New Age website because the guy was talking about this like machine that was going into like alternate universes and pulling back solutions from them into this universe.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, this is like some cool New Age shit. And then it's like, no, it isn't. It's the guy who's making the quantum computers that are being used by NASA.
Yeah.
And this, it's like, what?
Dude, it's crazy. And think about computers in the 70s or like, you know, giant, they would take up a full room. Or like the 60s, I guess it was, you know, and now they're in our pockets and they're infinitely more powerful. Well, not infinitely, but, you know.
But they're,
and
they're
now
like,
quantum computers are going to do.
Dude, they're existing in a superposition. You know about superpositions? You know about this
shit? Okay, is this have anything to do with like, oh, tell me, because I don't want to say.
Superposition is like a new cryptocurrency. It's
okay.
Like way better than fucking Bitcoin, and I highly recommend that you invest.
Let me know where to buy it. No. What is it?
So, well, I'm sorry, everyone listening. Forgive me. I obviously am not a quantum physicist,
Oh wait, is this like quantum entangled particles, where like one particle fucking over here instantly change, like has a reaction to another one, which by the way makes me think that's all sorry, because I know you're going to tell me the real thing.
Cut the guy off who's talking about superposition anytime you want, man.
No, but like all of the like quantum physics stuff is, that's the stuff that I look at as the most glaring evidence for the potential of us being in a simulation, because it's just like, what in the fuck is going on here with the quantum entangled particles? If that, I might be saying that wrong, but like they're, you know about that, right? Where it's like there's a particle, they could be fucking across the fucking universe.
Yeah.
And so obviously faster than light, if this particle gets changed, that one immediately responds in real time.
Which is, wait, let me interject here.
Yeah.
This brings me to a point I forgot to make earlier.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes against the fucking nihilistic bullshit that I do love to bellow out for no reason. I do like to say, there's no future, no past, baby. But one of the ideas is, okay, so if this like quantum entanglement exists, and if there is this potential for there being a multiverse, and if the superposition is the idea that like essentially like a particle is existing in all the states at once somehow in some way we don't understand.
Okay.
So there is theoretically a future version of you that is enlightened, awakened, and existing in some kind of techno-utopia that overcame all the problems of, or maybe it's like in the future they took you. You're one of the people who does have a very high likelihood of at the very least being reproduced with some AI and like sort of put in some
Let's
infinite
do it.
Soul. Probably already happened.
Put
that's
me in
probably
that,
what
oh,
we're
that's
in.
Where it, oh,
anyway,
my God, of
but
course.
But that being said, if this is the potential that time is like all happening at once, then theoretically you could connect to that version of yourself in the future now.
Yeah.
But even weirder, that version of you in the future could be calling all the various suffering versions of you into itself, because it has compassion for all the various forms of itself that are suffering. The version of you that right now could be like, I don't know, under a fucking pier right now in some kind of sick glory hole up to your fucking waist and like shit, wearing clown outfit,
absolutely,
fairy wings, just cheeseburgers scattered around, all the way to like a version of you that like, I don't know, is like incredibly obsessed with his abs or some shit, to the version of you that like never ever got into like art at all.
Yeah.
There could be some being, some super hyper version of you that's like, come home, calling. And the way that it's calling is by sending ideas backwards through time. And every time you get an epiphany or that desire to help or that desire to make yourself better, you're actually getting a telegram from the future perfected version of yourself saying, hey, I'm up here, over here, this way, come over here.
Man.
That's that, you know, again, agnosticism.
I mean, listen, I love that's what's great about agnosticism is that you can think about all this shit and explore it and get your mind have your mind blown by it, you know? Like, whoa, what the fuck? It's great. Listen, it's better than being like, you know, rigidly locked into some sort of ideology that you're basically encaged by, you know?
We're almost at the top of the pyramid here. And because we have elevated you to this situation of a man god, do you have anything you want to say to the people before we put a obsidian dagger in your chest and offer your heart to the sun god?
And then I will haunt everyone. I'll do my very best to try to haunt everyone in some way. So maybe scientists, you know, keep an eye out for hauntings. That'll be me. No, I don't know. I always say the same fucking thing, which is just like, I think if you can do something good for somebody every day or try to, or even if it's just once a week on any level, on any scale, even if it's just tweeting something nice to somebody, if that's all you have access to. Let's say you're a total agoraphobe or whatever. Yeah. Just if there's someone out there that you're a fan of, or that you're, or that you think kindly of, even if it's just someone you know in real life, I don't know. Just do something nice for people if you can. I think if everyone did more of that, not only does it make you feel better, but it also sends good energy out into the world, and the people that receive that kindness, they'll cycle it back in other direct. It'll go back into the cycle of kindness. I just think there's too much right now. We have so much fucking disconnection from humanity and from empathy and emotions, because we're all just looking at these screens and text, and it's like you read the text in the tone that you perceive it to be written, and it could be completely different tone, and it could be, you know, there's just all of that going on. And I don't know, if you're hearing this, like, just go out and help an old lady across the street. Seriously, like, if you see a loose dog, like stop your car and try to save it from getting hit. Or if ever there's an opportunity that presents itself for you to do something to make a positive impact in the world, you know, try your best to do it.
And
imagine it as a doorway
into another dimension. Because, like, if you look at those opportunities not as like, well, there's a thing I could do, it seems really small.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking about that, think of your entire universe as this cube that you're stuck in if you don't like where you're at.
Yeah.
And every time you do something good, you literally walk through a door into a slightly different universe. And all you need to do is, like, a few dogs, a couple old ladies, a few nice tweets, and the next thing you know, a fucking UFO could be landing.
Oh man, Norm Macdonald has this hilarious story about feeding a homeless guy. I'm not gonna repeat it. It's a long joke.
He's so funny,
dude. I love that guy so much. His sense of humor, because it's like he's the perfect example of someone who's like, you know, he's a good dude, but then he has like an edgy, like his sense of he'll tell jokes that by today's standards would be like, if you know the classic thing that happens, comedian tells joke, joke gets taken, put into text form. By some outraged journalist, people read it and it's just anger across the globe. It's a joke. It's a fucking joke. Like, can we stop? But like, he's the perfect example of someone that would happen to. All his old shit, it's like so easy to, like the whole Janice, the woman that goes missing, you know, that whole bit. I don't know if you remember. It's great. But anyway, so he has a whole bit about feeding a homeless guy, and it's funny because it's like at the crossroads of like, oh, you know, he's going to help this guy out. He's going to do a good thing. And then it's just the comedy comes in. The sort of Seinfeldian, like, reality of, like, this homeless guy stinking the whole fucking restaurant up. And he's like, I should have just helped the guy get crack. You know, like, I think is the punchline. It's like, you know, he's like, his mom always told him, oh, the homeless, don't give homeless people money. They're going to go buy crack. And then he's like, I'm going to take him, I'm going to get buy him food, you know, and take him to lunch or whatever. Anyway,
I've heard a variation of that joke where it's like, don't give them money, they're just gonna use it for drugs. And it's like, I can't remember who says this joke. I hate doing this. I'm so sorry whoever told this joke. It's not me. I did not write this joke. A very famous great comic wrote this joke. Forgive me. I'm sorry. If someone tells me who it is, I will credit you. But the gag is like, yeah, he's just gonna go buy drugs. And then I realize, well, that's just what I'm gonna do too.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, we have to, you know, it's I think that, like, you know, maybe what happens when you get to the top of the pyramid and right as the knife is about to plunge into your chest, if you've lived a good life, the pyramid flies away or something, yeah. You know, which is weird. I don't mean to like keep going, but that was the weird idea of this multiverse superpositioning shit, is that you literally can't die.
Yeah, you're connected to, it's across all of the, right? That's what super.
So whenever this you dies, you pop into the next the you, and the yeah, next yeah, yeah, you, yeah. and the next you, and
that's
the next you.
That's really fucking crazy.
No way out. No escape. Infinite, never-ending existence. Yeah, yeah. No break.
Oh, man.
Man, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's great to see you.
It was great to hang out with you.
I always love hanging out with you.
It's the best.
I don't think we hang out enough, to be honest.
We got
to
hang out more.
I agree.
And this is such a wonderful conversation.
Yeah, it was
thank
fun.
You so much. Hare Krishna, thank you.
Yes. Yeah. No, no.
How do you respond to that? I gotta stop doing it. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Justin Roiland. Definitely, if you haven't seen it, watch Rick and Morty. And make sure you play Trover Saves the Universe. Big thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Remember, if you go to squarespace.com/Duncan, and enter in offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. And much thanks to you for listening. If you like the DTFH, subscribe and give us a nice rating over at iTunes. It truly helps. And get a Squarespace website. That helps too. But what helps the most is for you to stop splitting atoms, Professor William Frank. You know what you're doing. You're causing the mandala effect in our universe, like a broken pinata spirals infinitely downward, decelerating and accelerating simultaneously and causing our universe to become increasingly absurd. Take a vacation. It's time for you to get away from that particle accelerator and enjoy a nice hot bath. Hare Krishna. We'll see you all next week.